welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Ron Glibbery. He co-founded Perazzo Technologies in 2009 and serves as its chief executive officer. Prior to co-founding Perazzo Technologies, Ron held executive positions at Clear Semiconductor, Intelon, Cogency Semiconductor, and LSI Logic. Welcome to the podcast, Ron.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
The first question I like to ask is, what first brought you to semiconductors? Do you have a story you can share with us?
Well, it's a bit of a story. When I graduated from electrical engineering, I was looking for a job, and I happened to join a company called Litton Systems, and we made computer chips for F-16s at the time. So first 4 years of my career were designing these really cool chips for avionics inside F-16. So I always enjoy going to the Top Gun movies because I'm hoping to see some of our products in the fighters from those movies. But yeah, so it was a great way to kind of really get started in the industry. Certainly learned a lot about the technology. And after that, moved on to a company called LSI Logic, which, you know, in Silicon Valley was really one of the, you know, founding semiconductor companies under a fellow named Wilf Corrigan. So really have semiconductors in my blood from way back.
Yeah, you know, similar with me, I grew up in Silicon Valley, but I got my pilot's license at a very early age. And so avionics was my introduction to semiconductors in a sense. And, you know, I still fly now and I also sail, and the avionics are just incredible. Makes life much easier, but we all have to realize that it's all about the semiconductors. So tell me about Perazzo. Tell me about the company history, the products.
Sure. Well, we were a company based out of Toronto, Canada. And, around the 2008-2009 timeframe, I had come from, I got into the wireless, kind of the communications business through Intelon and Clear. And I really thought in my mind at the time that, there was a fundamental thesis, which was, the existing spectrum of wireless was getting saturated. And over time, the world will need more bandwidth and more spectrum. And I stumbled upon a technology called 60 gigahertz millimeter wave technology. So I was really interested in trying to figure out how to get that off the ground. So the local university, University of Toronto, actually was really a world leader in this in the research of this technology. So we acquired the core technology from University of Toronto, and that's how we got started. So it was great because, you know, a lot of the technical risk had already been fleshed out by the university. And so, you know, from a, you know, fundraising perspective, it gave us a good solid base to get going because it was, you know, there is a large technology risk to this day, but, you know, because the university had done so much research, it really facilitated our ability to get financed and get the company started.
Yeah, a lot of technology companies that I've worked with have the same history coming out of the universities, or some of them are just PhD thesis, but some of the most successful companies. So you've been in business for 14 years. How has the company and your products evolved over that time?
Well, you know, first off, I'd like to say that, you know, millimeter wave technology, as you may know, is since we operate in the frequency band from 24 to 100 gigahertz, it's very challenging. I mean, it's unlike kind of traditional wireless. It's very easy to make mistakes. It's very finicky technology. So, you know, the reason it took us such a long time is really, taking something from the university lab and going into high volume production. So that's a big leap. I mean, a lot of people, you know, talk to, their ability to show a link in a lab, but, translating that into a commercial reality took us a long time. We really started shipping in about 2017 in high volume. So, you know, we started off in the 60 gigahertz band, which in millimeter wave is unlicensed. And so there was actually an industry consortium at the time called YGIG, And we were part of the WiGig consortium. And they operated under the auspices of the IEEE 802.11ad. And so we, you know, we were part of that. And, we, our first chipset complied with that, complied with that standard. And then, you know, we were also, were key contributors to the next generation of that standard, which was 802.11ay. And those products are in production to this day. You know, in terms of evolving, like we, you know, we've taken this, our skills in 60 gigahertz and actually now migrated that. And just a few weeks ago, we actually announced our 5G millimeter wave product, which, you know, is still millimeter wave, but it operates in the, you know, in the spectrum of the of 5G, which is now licensed. So we've evolved from a company that was shipping millimeter wave into unlicensed spectrum, and now we've added to that capability to incorporate in our product line products that support licensed millimeter wave technology. So we're across the board. I mean, we certainly have a good business in our existing products, and we expect to see it grow through our licensed products in the future.
Okay, well, let's talk about licensed and unlicensed spectrum. When you say unlicensed, who are you targeting? Who are you talking about?
Well, where we've seen the most traction is in wireless ISPs. So this is this, you know, broad market in America and really around the world where, you know, a large number of consumers don't have access to high-speed internet. Maybe they get dial-up or, you know, 5 or 10 megabits per second. I mean, our goal is to provide, you know, really the masses with at least 100 megabit per second internet. And so it turns out there's millions and millions of consumers that are looking for that type of performance. So those are really more in suburban, maybe rural markets, kind of smaller markets where the traditional carriers don't operate. So the service providers are not your traditional Verizon's or AT&T's. It's actually what we call wireless ISPs. So, you know, it can range anywhere from a few thousand customers to hundreds of thousand customers. But so that would be the market that we really have traction in. Now, as a semiconductor company, we really supply to the equipment suppliers. I mean, you know, Ubiquiti, for example, is a famous company in that space that supplies into that. That supplies into that market. And what we're finding actually today is that now the service providers themselves are starting to build their own equipment. And, you know, so in some cases we supply directly to the service provider. So I would categorize the unlicensed market for us as wireless service providers servicing that portion of the market that the traditional carriers don't service.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So there's a lot of buzz around millimeter wave and 5G. There are large companies and small players in the market. How do you differentiate from the other companies?
Well, so if you look at the 5G specification, 5G brought out quite a few new things to the ballgame in their specification. I mean, one aspect of 5G is that they added millimeter wave. And the whole reason they added millimeter wave was to provide that extra spectrum, extra bandwidth, because the wireless demand is truly growing at an exponential rate. So really the carriers really realized they needed to find an alternative to their existing spectrum. So one of the features of 5G specification is the inclusion of millimeter wave. Two, the 5G specification, unlike prior specifications, really had a very specific focus on what we call fixed wireless access. Fixed wireless access is exactly what we do now in the unlicensed band. So in the 5G specification, I mean, for example, the iPhone 12 and iPhone 13 support millimeter wave. Well, our strategy was not to go after, you know, that was really kind of Qualcomm's territory. So we decided that we were going to focus on fixed wireless access. This is because we had great experience. You know, we're a leader in fixed wireless access and unlicensed millimeter wave. And our strategy in 5G is to go after the millimeter wave portion, the millimeter wave slash fixed wireless portion of the 5G specification. So we've announced our product for for that market. And that product is targeted at user equipment, i.e., you know, the device you put on in your home that receives a millimeter wave signal and gives you very high speed access. So the product we came out with, we feel is very, well, you know, first and foremost, it actually supports the full spectrum of millimeter wave from 24 to 43 gigahertz, which the carriers demand. And it's the most highly integrated 5G millimeter wave product in the world for that market. So really that translates to integration and ultimately cost. And we feel our performance is superior as well. So by focusing on fixed wireless, it really differentiates from others either focusing on infrastructure or on, you know, handsets. We really want to own the fixed wireless portion of the millimeter wave market.
Okay, got it. So where do you see Prazo in 5 years?
Well, we just, you know, again, we feel there's a very significant moat in terms of from a technology perspective. Millimeter wave is very hard to do, and it's very hard to get in production. And we, you know, just kind of a war story. I mean, when we were starting off the company and we used to get our millimeter wave chips back, I mean, it would take us weeks to get them working and get them tuned up. And, you know, on our 5G chip, it took about 3 hours. So it just goes to show that, you know, with experience, you just get good at this millimeter wave technology, and we're a world-class company. So we will continue to leverage that technology, you know. And so, for example, the chip that we've got in for 5G in place now, so again, because the architecture supports, you know, full bandwidth and it supports dual polarization, we really want to scale that to different markets, like such as hotspots. So, for example, you're out at, you know, on a patio or a coffee shop, you want to get really great internet access. You know, we want to be the guys that support that through a high-speed hotspot. We want to get into laptops. We want to get into tablets. So, you know, not all the way to mobile, but really that kind of in-between ground, you know, where, you know, we're in today, which is, you know, consumer premise equipment, in between that and mobile devices. So all the in-between devices like hotspots, laptops, tablets, and so on. So we really feel that we'll be a real player in that whole space of equipment for 5G.
Well, that will keep you busy. That's a big market.
It's definitely going to keep us busy. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And what makes me, I guess, gives me, you know, keeps me super motivated is that, you know, people try to compete with us, and it's just very, very difficult. I mean, I'm so thrilled with the intellectual property that we've built up as a company. And I think, you know, our 5G chip, just that whole experience has really exemplified, you know, where we've come over the last 14 years in terms of our experience and our ability to build these chips in, you know, in high volume.
Yeah, and 6G will be right around the corner. So have you felt any impact from supply chain and the inflation challenges we're experiencing?
Well, on the supply chain, I mean, we really, let's face it, that started well over a year ago. I mean, it started early, certainly in the first half of 2021, and it caught us off guard at the time. But we worked through it, and so, you know, we feel that's water under the bridge. I mean, clearly, really the upshot is it just takes a lot more planning and ordering. So right now, we kind of need to order 9 to 12 months ahead of time. And if you do, it works out pretty well. I mean, that's the bottom line here is that on the supply chain, you know, we had long lead times and now we have longer lead times, but it's just really making sure that, you know, we get on side with our customers. We make sure that we've got their forecasts. You know, we give our suppliers forecasts, and there's a real management issue there. So definitely caught us off guard at first. We think we've worked our way through it, but there's still black swans like the for example, the COVID shutdown in Shanghai for 6 weeks wasn't fun. Again, we've kind of worked through that, but it, you know, that's one that just caught us off guard, right? But broadly, I would say that, you know, the supply chain really comes down to how well you manage those operations, and we've learned a lot over the last 12 months. You know, I think in terms of inflation, everybody's raising prices and we're raising prices. So that's just the bottom line. I mean, I think, you'll see electronics, the price of electronics is just has to go up because, the costs are going up across the board. But, I think that's really where we've ended up on the inflation side is we've all seen it, we've all reacted to it, and it's really going to translate to higher priced products over time.
Yeah, well, that's just another way to control demand as well, right? When the prices
go
up.
Fair enough.
But you know, I think our supply chain is much stronger now, and you know, we have, you know, what they say is, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I think that applies to the supply chain. I mean, so many smart people in this business, I have never had a doubt that we would overcome any of these challenges. So I think we have, and I do see the supply chain as much stronger and getting better every day. So, you know, I think we're through it, but it was a good experience for us for sure. You know, you always want to see these challenges and overcome them and become, you know, a better company.
Well, I will tell you, I mean, what I've seen so far is, so we do get material built in Taiwan, but our latest 5G chip is built in America. And I'm really happy about that. Like, I don't know, like where things are at in the world today. I just feel like bringing stuff on shore is a good thing. I mean, I don't have a specific, reason to be worried, but I just feel more comfortable with that whole process. So I'm glad to see that, there's offshore that we're bringing, a lot of the fab onto North American soil.
Yeah, that's part of the solution to the supply chain problems. And, that's going to evolve over the years, but I think it's a very good sign. So this is a good place to stop. Thank you, Ron, for your time. Great content. And we'll talk to you soon.
That was terrific, Daniel. Thank you very much. If there's anything else you need from me, let us know.
Great. Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.